Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and once again, thank you for joining our show. My name is Wanda McKinley with co-host Stephanie Kennedy Alford. I am the founder of We Are Survivors, which is a nonprofit organization. Our purpose is to provide a stable environment for abused and battered men, women, and children by providing temporary shelter, counseling, and employment training. We want to help men and women transition from abusive situations to being self-sufficient in society. We Are Survivors' vision is to empower men and women and to show them that they can and will survive and thrive in society on their own, as well as uplift them and provide them with a new life and a new perspective of what normal life should be by enhancing and elevating them. I am a survivor of domestic violence. I was raped from the age of 7 to 18 by my biological father as well as my stepfather. My ex-husband was also very abusive. He was sexually, financially, verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive, and I was with him for 12 years. God has called me to be transparent so that I may help men, women, and children who have walked or may still be walking in my shoes. Hello, Stephanie. How are you doing today?
I am good. What about you?
It's Thursday, and an hour and a half I'll be at church singing for my God. So I'm excited. I'm really excited. And it's the end of the week. I'm off tomorrow.
Yes.
I know, yes. Right? Yes.
Right.
So tell us what you got going on.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and talk about the fundraisers. We currently have several fundraisers that we would love to have your support on, any or all. We do the Kroger Plus Rewards Card. If you currently have a Kroger Plus Card, or if you go and get a Kroger Plus Card, if you go to Kroger.com, make sure you register it, and then link it to We Are Survivors. If you type in We, it should pull up We Are Survivors and link it to it. And each quarter, according to what you spend, they will send us a donation. We also do Tum Thumb. If you go to TumThumb.com and either print their form and put their your card number on there and link it to We Are Survivors, or if you contact us, we will send you the form with our information on it already, and we just have to turn it back in to the TumThumb, and each quarter they will send us a donation according to what you spend. We also do the CPN discount card, which is only $15 a year. You get discounts all over the U.S., and we do the Compass Bank rewards, where if you have a Compass Bank account, or if you open a Compass Bank account and link it to We Are Survivors, then they'll send us a donation as well. If you're interested in any of those, you can either call or text 817-320-2571. Again, it's 817-320-2571, and I'd be happy to get you connected with any of those. And then we do the photography fundraiser, and Wanda, I'm going to let you share about that one.
Thank you. The other fundraising event that we have going on is called the Purple City Project, which is a domestic violence awareness photo shoot campaign. And you can either book a professional meeting with your coworkers or company that you work for, or personal. And with this, the funds will be given to We Are Survivors. So let me tell you about the packages that he does offer. He has actually four. I'm just going to name the top two, and it's a $100 value package at $55, and it's a 20-minute session, up to four people, unlimited shots, one look. So for ladies, that means one outfit to pick your favorite outfit, and two edits. And that package, like I said, is just $55. Then you have an $80 package, which is valued at $160. It's a 45-minute session, up to four people. You have unlimited shots with two looks, which means you can change outfits, and four edits, which means you get to pick four pictures. I did that package, actually, myself. And like I said before, I took 303 pictures, and trying to pick only four pictures, I'm still trying to pick those pictures out. The photographer's name is Charles. He can be called or texted at 214-591-1370. Again, that is 214-591-1370, and his name is Charles. And a portion of the proceeds will be donated to We Are Survivors so that we may be able to help provide hotel rooms for men, women, and children who are in need, because there are quite a few times when there are no beds available in shelters, and we want to be able to remove that individual from a violent situation at that time. It's really heartbreaking when we get calls for help and our hands are tied. So we really do appreciate people participating in our fundraising events and, you know, just showing support even at the Tom Thumb, the Kroger, even with the Compass. You don't even have to, you know, the money that you spend on your everyday living expenses can also help benefit someone that's in need. So there's, you know, we give you ways and options to not have to take out of your everyday living expenses and just, you know, sign up with Kroger. We all eat. We all have to eat. So when you purchase something, then from your purchase, they donate from what you pay for your food. Even with Compass Bank, whenever you swipe that card for gas, movies, food, clothes, whatever it may be, Compass takes a percentage of your spending and donates it to We Are Survivors so that we can help men, women, and children. And we do have several events coming up. We'll touch on that towards the end of the show. I'm really excited about one that's tomorrow, which is Hearts and Heels. It's sold out, so if you all didn't get your tickets, you're going to miss out on some great fashion show, a lot of great entertainment, and a lot of information to take from it. So I'm really looking forward to that. But we'll get into a lot of the different events that are coming up and some of the opportunities that We Are Survivors have right now. But what we want to do is, I'm excited about our guest that we have on the show. She's a author. She is a volunteer. She is a speaker. And there is so much that she has going on. She has her personal testimony. And Teresa Howard, how are you?
I'm good this evening. How are y'all?
We are blessed. We're so excited to have you on the show. You don't live here in Dallas, and you do have that, as I said, that Texas twang. Can you let everybody know what part of Texas do you live in, and where are you from?
East Texas. I live in East Texas. I'm right outside of Tyler.
And I'm from East Texas as well.
I'm in Murchison, between Athens and Tyler on 31.
Okay, I'm from Marshall.
Oh, I know where that is, yes. Not far.
And I lived in Tyler, so we all experienced some East Texas.
Right.
Isn't that something? Wow.
Yes.
Now.
Something else in common. Wow.
That's neat. Now, Teresa, I have already said that you're a professional speaker. You are a writer. You are a published author. And you do volunteer. We just discussed that earlier. What else do you do?
My partner and I, Stacey, my business partner, Stacey Flowers, and I, we have Tribute Magazine, which is a magazine in East Texas, and we celebrate women with the magazine. We celebrate women in business, women giving back to their communities, just women in general, because in East Texas we found that there's not so much of the networking and the women supporting women mentality or opportunities. And so we decided to change that. And so that's what we've been doing. We started the magazine. Our first published in January, our first issue. Our second issue will come out in March. And so we're pretty excited about that. We've had a lot of good feedback and a lot of women stepping up. This in the March issue, we're spotlighting on women who give back to their community, because women give back in a lot of ways that sometimes go unnoticed. And so we've decided to celebrate that. So there are a lot of great volunteer opportunities in East Texas and a lot of need in East Texas that needs to be met. And so that's our way of helping out and getting the word out about those organizations, is to spotlight them in our magazine.
Oh, wow. And whose idea was it to start the magazine? What sparked that? How did that even come about?
We took a workshop in Dallas at Stephanie Franco's event, and Katrina Loco was teaching it, and she was teaching on media and the different, you know, aspects that you could do. You could do radio, you could do television, you could do a magazine, newspaper, print, the things that you could do. And I was sitting at one end of the table, and Stacey, we go to a lot of networking. We work a lot of things together because we drive, so we go to a lot of things together. And she was sitting at the other end of the table, and we were taking notes. And on our notes, it said, my note said, we need to start a magazine. And hers said the same thing. So when we came out, we just had that dream. That was in October, and we published the first issue in January. So we took that dream and ran with it and made it happen.
That's awesome.
That was awesome.
So is the magazine, you know, is it, go ahead.
We're in print and online.
Okay.
And you can find
you
us
answered
at
my question.
ISS. Yep, we are in print and online. So we are both.
And what was the name of it?
In print, we're at Tribute Magazine, Women Changing Lives.
Oh, wow. I'm gonna have to look that up. Because I know I write monthly for Katrina's magazine, Women of Abundant Wealth. So that's exciting to take on a task. So what goes into starting up a magazine?
There's a lot of work, and it's a lot of trial and error. We learned a lot with the first issue. You have to get your advertisers, you know, you have to get your content, you have to have authors, you know, contributing writers, because you cannot write it all yourself. So we ask for contributing articles, you know, we let anybody write for free in the magazine. They, as long as their article matches with our mission of women changing lives, you know. And so we have them just submit their articles, and then you have to make sure that you have enough advertisers to offset your printing costs. And so it's a lot of work, but it was a dream of ours, and it's unheard of in East Texas. There's not a lot of women's magazines, and there's definitely not a lot of business women's magazines that spotlight women in business or networking events or things like that. I mean, there's a lot of cooking and things like that magazines for women out here, but there's in East Texas, there's not a lot of accent or a lot of spotlight on women changing lives and doing things in business. We still fight the mentality that we're supposed to be home in the kitchen. Raising.
Right.
You know, they have that thought out here. It's
yeah.
a big thought, trust me, because we run into it all the time. And so it for us, that was one thing we wanted to do. I have 13 grandkids, and most of them are
wow.
both. And I wanted them to grow up and see a woman doing more with her life, that she had choices and she could do anything she put her mind to. And, you know, whatever we do in life, there's someone watching us. And that's one thing Stacey and I had talked about. There's someone watching us. And since I work for myself and I set my own schedule, there's been times that my grandkids have had school holidays or something, and Stacey and I have been able to take them with us to workshops or to different things, and they get to see us in action, which for a little girl, that's a big impression on their life.
It's a big thing,
Yeah. And I have a granddaughter. Her name is Skyly May, and she's 9. She'll be 10 in May. She's my youngest granddaughter, or next to the youngest, because we just had one. She'll be a year. So she's the next to the youngest granddaughter. And she now has her own daily planner. She has her own book that she's writing all her little stories down in. And so it's a, makes a big impression on children when you give them that option. Actually, when we had our launch for our magazine, we had her be our keynote speaker. We let her introduce the magazine and tell what it was about. She had her own little note. You know, she was all excited. And so it just, it lights a spark in them, or it adds fuel to a fire they already have in them. You know, mm-hmm. they have a dream, and then they see someone achieving their dreams and doing what they set out to do and how to make a plan and how to make it happen. And young girls, it, you know, you either spark the dream or you ignite the fire that's already in them. You add fuel to it. And that's a great honor. That's, you know, if I do nothing else than inspire young women to do great with their lives, I've done enough.
Wow. Now, for you to have such a passion to promote, support, and educate, as well as motivate women, what is your fuel? What is your fire? What is driving you to want to be that spokesperson for women?
I want to be the woman that I needed at 16 when I met my ex, my abuser, because mm-hmm. no one told me the things that I could do with my life. You know, no one told me the things that I could achieve. No one told me that abuse was not okay, that verbal abuse, physical abuse, mental abuse, emotional abuse was not okay. And so I strived to be the woman that I needed at 16. Because had I met that woman that I am now telling me these things, my life would have been entirely different. And so that's what I want to be to the girls I speak to now, that woman I needed when I was in the midst of being courted by my abuser. Because, you know, my ex was 25 and I was 16 going on 17. And so
wow.
no one was there to stand in that gap. And so that's who I want to be. I want to be that woman that I needed when I was a young girl. Because as much as my mother had loved me, my mother was, my childhood was unstable. You know, my mother had several husbands. She, you know, we went from one to the other, or we lived with my grandparents. We never had stability. I wasn't taught what that relationship was supposed to look like, because it was never, you know, there was never mm-hmm. a male-female love relationship that was stable in my life that I could say, oh, that's what it's supposed to look like. It was always volatile and alcohol and, you know, yelling and screaming and fighting. And that was, mm-hmm. you know, that was the norm. And, you know, when you don't learn that as a young person, it mimics in your relationships as you grow up.
And
even though you say in your head, it calls you to repeat the pattern without realizing it. My ex was abusive, but he was there. My father was a heroin addict, and he was never home. He was never there. I don't even remember living with him as a child, even though my mother states he was there. I never remember living in the home with him, because he was never home. And so when I had my children, even though my situation was horrible, I would say to myself, my kids need a dad. I never had a dad. You know, I don't mm-hmm. want that picture without that dad. And so I tried so hard to make that square peg fit in that round hole. I would make excuses for his drinking. I'd make excuses for his behavior, because I wanted so bad for that family picture to work, because no one was there to tell me that children would rather be from a broken home than live in one. No one was there to tell me that, those truths. You know, they would say, oh, well, you know, he drinks a lot, but he'll grow up, he'll get out of that situation. He was already almost 10 years older than me. He should have been out, you know, he should have been grown a long time ago. But
right.
no one was there to stand in and say to me, Teresa, this is not right. And you know, and it starts out small when, or at least mine did. It was
mm-hmm.
little things like, I couldn't keep the house clean enough, you know, or I wasn't as smart as him, or I wasn't, you know, I couldn't do anything right. I never did anything right. You know, I didn't know how to do the cooking, because I'll be honest, I could not cook, because I had never had to deal with my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was 16. I mean, I could microwave you something. That was about it. But, you know, all these skills I didn't have, he took and just blew them out of proportion, you know. To I was ignorant, I was stupid, you know. I wasn't the prettiest girl on the block, or I, you know, after I had my children, well, you're not as thin as you used to be, you're not, you know, all of these things. You don't want to party, because I didn't party. And that was what was so odd, is because it wasn't like we had the same lifestyle. I had a life at home with my kids, and then he had his own life. His life never changed just because we were married and we had two kids. His life did not change. He still hung out with his buddies. He still came home when he felt like it, you know. He did whatever he wanted to. His life went on just like he had never married. And so, but no one was there because in my mind it was like at least he's their father, you know. He didn't go to things and show up to things, you know, but he lives in our home, even though they would question, Mom, where's Dad? You know, he hasn't come home in 2 days. But I would make excuses. Oh, he's working. You know, he got in late. I always lied for him because I call a spade now. I lied for him on a regular basis. And then my girls grew up in that same chaos, even though I thought in my mind, in my heart, that I'm giving them a better life. In reality, they're growing up in the same chaos because they're witnessing him call me names, put his hands on me, go to jail, you know, and all of those instances. They were, you know, because mean drunks are not nice people. And just because their children are in the room doesn't mean that they stop their tirade or their belittling of you. Your children, you know, my children witnessed that as young girls. And so I want to be, when I speak and when I write and all the things that I do, I want to be there for that young girl whose boyfriend is calling her names already. There's no ring on her finger. She's just dating him, and he's already got red flags. I want to be able to tell her how to recognize them, and you can't just push them under the rug and hope they're not going to, you know, develop into something else, because they will. Because the leopard don't change, it's not going to get better because, you know, you marry him. When I was young and he didn't want me around my friends or my family, I would be like, oh, he loves me so much, he doesn't want me to share me with anybody. But in reality, he's isolating. But we don't see that as young girls. We're so blinded because I did love him. I'm the first to say I was head over heels. I thought he walked on water there for a few years. He could do no wrong because I had a safe house. I never had anything of my own. My mother, until I was probably 20, 24 years, my early 20s, before my mother ever owned a home with my stepdad that she's married to now, we'd never owned anything. We'd never had anything that was ours. You know, everything, we either rented and we lived every 6 months. And now I realize it's because that's when they evict you. Back then I thought we were just adventurous. When I was a young kid, we move all the time.
Wow.
We never stay in one place, but it was because we owed rent. You know, when you look back on your childhood, you see things differently than when you're in it.
That
and
is
they
so
don't
true.
Tell you what's going on.
Right.
You know, I look back and I think, how do we know if we stayed in the same city, but we moved all over? I mean, we lived all over that town. But it was because every time the rent came due or 6 months, and by the time right before they evict us, my mom packed us up and moved us somewhere. And so that was my childhood. And so he had his own home. He had his own place, you know. And so for me, that was stability. But what I didn't realize was the other side of it. You know, like my grandmother used to tell us, the devil never comes in an ugly package. Sometimes you have to look at everything. You know, I was so busy trying to leap from the, you know, frying pan of my parents' house and the instability of my mother and them that I jumped right into the flames. That's why I speak out to the world, because I want to be that person who warns them, who tells them, because your teachers can tell you, your counselors can tell you, your mom can tell you. But if I can tell you I've been there, I've done that,
right?
I can quote you what he's going to say to you. I can tell you all the lies he's going to make up the first time he hits you, how he's never going to do it again. And they always turn it on you, how he didn't mean for you to make him that mad. He did not mean for you to upset him like that. He just lost it. If we just wouldn't keep back-talking him, if we'd just be quiet, he wouldn't have lost it like that. All the lies never going to happen again, because that is a lie. Once he crosses that line and has struck you, hit you, pushed you, shoved you, he will do it again. It's just like a ticking time bomb. You're waiting for it to go off, because it will happen again. If he's ever made that leap to push, shove, choke you, smack you, slap you, whatever. I mean, my ex tried to push me from a moving truck. And, you know, these things, it's not going to unchange. That person is not going to change. And my ex went through anger management so time he should have had a referral card. You know, it didn't change him. He is who he is. And until he decides to change himself, you cannot pray him better. You cannot beg him better. You cannot wish him better. You cannot love him better. It won't happen. And I can tell you, because I was there 20 years, and he's not any different today than he was when I walked out after 20 years of being married to him. He's not any different.
Wow.
The only difference is I'm not there protecting everybody else from how crazy he acts. You know, because when I left, my in-laws were like, he is insane. I'm like, he's been insane 20 years. He's just, I was there to buffer everybody else from his insanity.
Yeah, you were the buffer. Right.
Daughters didn't see it because I covered it up. Because I can't tell you how many times he trashed my house, tore things from my walls, shattered my dishes. And by the time my kids got up for school the next morning, my house was back in order. They just thought I rearranged the furniture and their breakfast was ready for school.
Wow.
Because I hid it that well. Because I was not going to be that person that everybody talked about. You know, I didn't want to tell anybody what was going on. I went to church. I went to work. I went, you know, I got a college education in the midst of all my chaos. But never once did I say, I covered black eyes, cracked ribs, handprints on. I wore long sleeves in the summer because there were handprints on my arms. You know, I covered everything. And that's why I speak out, because there's a woman out there who is in my shoes who doesn't realize how dangerous it is, or how much she needs to leave, or that there is life after abuse. Because he has beaten her down so much and told her so many times how worthless she is, how uneducated she is, how unloved she is, how lucky she is that he even tolerates her, that she does not realize that there is a whole big world out there waiting to embrace her and to help her heal.
That
and that's
so
why
true.
I do it.
Wow. You said a lot, Teresa, that I can relate to. And for one, one of our goals at We Are Survivors is to deprogram children, because you're so right. You know, when you grow up seeing things, that's the way you think. You think that's the norm. You think that's the way a relationship is supposed to be. And when you don't have that guidance, when you don't have that support system, you don't have that person to educate you, then you do fall into what you've seen or your environment or what you've been around, because that's comfortable to you, because that's what you know.
That's your norm.
What you've seen.
Right.
So to hear you say that,
normal.
I was like, yeah. And a lot of people
and
be
like,
well,
that's how my children came out. My children didn't come out unscarred. You know, they have issues. They have problems. My oldest is the pleaser. She has three kids, her husband, and her, she's the pleaser. She never wants anybody upset. She just wants everybody calm. She's always the peacemaker, even to sacrifice what she thinks or she says. You know, she wants to be the peacemaker. My youngest is not letting anybody in. She's going to be my husband. She's not going to be hurt or vulnerable. But the sad part is that you can't love if you're not vulnerable enough to let someone in.
Mm-hmm.
So at 24, she doesn't love. She doesn't let someone in. She's not going to let anybody get that close to her to have that power over her heart, her life. And that, you know, those are scars that we give our children, because they grew up in abuse. They walk one road or they walk the other, but they don't come out unscathed. No children who witness abuse come out unscathed.
That is so true. That yes, because I know there are times when I thought I was protecting my child or hiding her, or, you know, closing doors from the yelling and the throwing stuff, and it doesn't work. They hear, they see, they feel, and they pick up on things that as adults we think we're hiding and or trying to protect them from. A lot of children know more than adults realize. And in a domestic violence situation, I think it's beneficial to, instead of I learned in my relationship with my daughter, who's 23, she's turned 23 last month, me trying to hide it from her, you want to maybe try and educate. It's kind of like a sticky situation, because sometimes that, by me protecting my daughter, I think, too, it had some animosity. She had animosity built up. And when I explained to her, when all of this came out, and her mom's story, and why I did what I did, and why she couldn't do this, and why she couldn't do that, for her, it took so many years for her to get an understanding as to why her mom was overbearing. When I'm thinking I'm protecting her, my child perceived the totally different. So it's really too trying to find that thin line between protecting, educating, supporting your child or your children in a manner where they feel, you know, like they are still protected. And it's really hard to try to balance the two. But I think I've learned from my child, me trying to protect her and keep quiet and hide this and hide that. For her, it, like I said, she had some animosity because she didn't understand everything that was going on. Even though you're a child, that's not a, you know, we try, that's not for a child to understand.
Right.
But in the same token, trying to, it seems even hard to find the words, though, but just trying to, you know, soothe the child
to
the point where, yeah. But sometimes that shielding also backfires. Sometimes,
you know, I tried to keep my girls from it, and I didn't want to say things, because when I left, my girls were grown, and I didn't want to bash their father. Of course, you know, he did
right.
that all on his own, because he self-destructed on his own. They already knew how bad he was. But I would find not to speak ill of him, even though, you know, I had awful things in my head going through. You know, because I could have screamed at the moon how horrible he was. But with my children, I have grandchildren that share that DNA too. And so I wanted to be careful and not be that bitter, angry woman, you know, who just every time I talked to them, it was a bash party on their father. And so I tried not to. And then I found out that what happened is, especially with my youngest, my oldest is pretty much, which I sent her to California when I left her dad. So she missed a lot of the animosity, because once he figured out I wasn't coming back, he's pretty ticked and pretty mad.
Mm-hmm.
And my children we lived out in the country, and we had a house. And then the daughter that moved to California, she had a trailer house out there. Well, I took and stored everything because, you know, I was still in limbo. I was living with my parents again. My daughter was living with her friend. And so we had a lot of property, you know, dressers, pictures, things like, you know, just things that you don't know what to do with. And so we stored them in my daughter's trailer house. Well, he got drunk one night, gasoline, and lit it afire.
No.
Most of it belonged to our children. Yes.
Wow.
Most of it belonged to our children. It was their whole childhood. All, you know, the stuffed animals they saved, the dolls from when they were little, their yearbooks, their mom, you know, all of their childhood went up in flames. And I was just like, Then he called the law and told them that the youngest, that he was sure she had set the house on fire. Well, he realized he didn't cut his phone off. He's at the fire, so, you know. But in the state of Texas, they just issued him a ticket for unlawful burning because we were not divorced yet, so there was not a property division. We were only separate, you know, I filed for divorce, but it was not final. And so, I mean, he self-destructed on his own. But my youngest, she was very angry, not only him, but there was more of the abuse and the things that she had witnessed as a child than I realized that she had absorbed. I thought I had her capped away, you know, hid away in her room or asleep or whatever, but she witnessed a lot more than what I was aware of. And so when that happened, she kind of just lashed out, and she was telling me, all these times she had, because her and him, you know, they did have lots of words. And so she's like lashing out, telling me all the times that she had saw him slap me, hit me, choke me. And to me, I was just floored because I did not realize how much they had actually seen, heard, and absorbed. Because in my mind, I thought I was protecting and hiding it from them, but they knew lots more than what I ever thought they saw. She had seen him choke me out. She saw when he cracked my ribs. I mean, she had seen lots more of the abuse firsthand than I had ever realized that she had witnessed. And that takes a toll on a child. And not only that, she's seeing the man who is supposed to love her mom literally trying to kill her mother. I mean, there's no other way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that takes a toll on a child. And when we try to shield our children from it, we may think that we're hiding the bruises and the slaps and the cussing and the name calling and the cussing and the things like that. But our children are like a sponge. They are everything around them. And they may not tell you, but we are riding on their souls. We're riding on their hearts these messages of violence. And then they go out in the world, and the world is already a hard, you know, unforgiving place. And they have no soft place to land, because at home is just as much as a battlefield as out on the street. And that's a sad reality.
It is. And so I'm thankful for women like yourself that want to make that difference, because really, you're right. For us that have experienced what we have experienced in life, it is a lot easier because we can relate to really help save women and children and even men, because I mentor homeless, pregnant mothers with or without children up to the age of 6. And when I walk into this transitional home, I always get these blank stares, because I dress nice, you know, I walk with my head up, my shoulders back, I drive a nice car, I'm educated. So when they see me, they look at me like, how can you relate to me? Here she go, trying to tell me something she knows nothing about. She can't tell me how I feel, because that's what they're used to getting from people that are, you know, doing what we do, you know, for a job. So I get that wall. But
those
when I sit down,
workers,
yes, there you go. So I get that wall. But when I sit down and tell them that I was raped from the age of 7 to 18 by not only my father, my biological father, but my stepfather, when I tell them that my husband has choked me out, when I tell them my husband has tried to set my clothes on fire in our bedroom, when I go and tell them I've been raped by my husband, then you see that wall just come down like, oh, my God, and you still walk with your head up and you still smile. Yes, and so can you. Let me help you get over the top. You know, you have to learn that God will put obstacles in your path and on your course, but as you complete that obstacle, you have to, while you're going through it, okay, God, what am I supposed to learn from this? Because he does things, I've learned in our lives, for us to better ourselves, where we can learn so that we can help others. So once someone actually peels down and really sees me as a survivor as well, it is amazing how then the tears start flowing and the questions and, well, how can I do this and how can I do that? Because they know you're genuinely there for them and not there because you work from 8 to 5. It does make a big difference. So I really do commend you. Right. And I want to commend you for being a voice. Because on my walk, I know now how important that is for us to be obedient and for us to, you know, use our past to help other people in their present as well as their future. And we don't even know, too, for them maybe to understand their past experiences. So I do want to commend you for that.
Thank you. And one thing that, you know, I always tell when I speak to young girls or I speak to the shelters and things, I tell them,
you know, people say, well, you're just speaking to that one woman. No, you're speaking to the person who's raising the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And so she has her children, and if she doesn't have children at that time, the young girls, they will go on to have families, and they will raise our next generation. And so in order to break the cycle, we have to start with the mothers who are raising our next generation so that they're not raised with those same callous, you know, well, he hits me, but he pays the bills, so it's okay. Or he hits me, but he always brings me flowers afterwards. He's always sorry. You know, it's always nice. You know, we just have rough pouches if I don't upset him. I've heard it all. And when you come in and you can tell them, my ex tried to throw me from a moving vehicle. When I was pregnant with my first child, he tried to crash the truck with me in it. He decided he did not want to be a father. You know, these should have been red flags for me. I just thought he needed to get it right and he was going to calm down. You know, somebody should have been there in my past.
All the time.
It's time to go, you know. But I didn't know what those red flags are because as much as I'd seen the hollering and the screaming, you know, because my mom was still loud. And so she was loud. I'd never actually seen someone hit before. You know, my stepdad, you know, he had attacked me sexually, but he had never, you know, beat my mom. And, you know, so when you're sitting there and you're in the midst of your own chaos, it's hard to save yourself. So you need
mm-hmm.
someone who's been there before who can walk you through the storm. Because things are going through your mind, and a lot of them, by the time they come to the surface, or by the time they left, or by the time they're in transitional housing, they already think that it's their fault. They already have been convinced and brainwashed that they did it to themselves. And so we have to rebuild her from the ground up. We have to start from, I know where you are and you can be here, because a lot of them do not think that they can get an education, do not think they're worth it, that someone else will love them unconditionally. I'm remarried. My husband now supports everything I do. I speak to women's groups. My husband will drive me to the women's group and sit in the parking lot until it's over.
That
we drove
awesome.
To Killeen.
That's beautiful.
He drove around Killeen while I went to the women's conference. He just drove around Killeen, saw the sights. I mean, we're a good four. We went the night before to stay in Killeen because we're a good 4 hours, 5 hours from Killeen. But that's because he supports and believes in me. He'll do whatever. He'll support me. He'll take me places. My ex, when I had a heart attack, my ex did not even come to the hospital. I mean,
wow.
So the difference
wow.
is not in age. But you don't think when you're in that, and I'm the honesty, I made it. My mom had to come to Dallas to pick me up because they ambulanced me to, I was in Kaufman at the time, and they took me by ambulance to Dallas Presbyterian, and he would not come and pick me up from the hospital. So I talked to my mom into coming and getting me from the hospital and carrying me back to Kaufman. And the whole way back to Kaufman, I made excuses for why my ex could not come to the hospital. You know, because
that's what we do. Yeah,
that's what we do.
Some of us
try to make it right.
Yeah.
We are the peacemakers.
Mm-hmm.
We try to make it right. And even
mm-hmm.
though it can never be right, we will not stop trying. I mean, we will continue to try to beat that square peg into
mm-hmm.
that round hole. I prayed
mm-hmm.
for him. I hit my knees. I talked to my pastor. You know, I tried hard to make it right. And sometimes it's just not right. I mean, it's not you. You cannot make another person. You can't pray another person right. You can't ask God to do it. That person has to change. He has free will. It's like when we are saved, nobody else can save us. We have to confess our sins and take Jesus into our heart ourselves. We have to do that. We have free will. It's the same with the abuser. He has to change. And if you can't make him, there's nothing you can do that's going to make it right. Can't keep a clean enough house, can't have good enough children, can't work hard enough. I mean, honestly, for 20 years, I paid my own bills. His money was his. I honestly could have lived pretty decently with my two children on my own. And my ex worked out of town, so we had he would be gone 3 months at a time. So we'd have 90 days of peace and quiet, and my children and I would have our own routine, and then we would have 3 weeks of chaos when he came home. And then he'd be
wow.
gone again. And so, you know, I learned to tolerate that and just map that out, you know, because that was my lot in life, I thought. I thought there's, you know, he had me convinced. You're 40 years old. Nobody's going to want you. You know, you're not skinny and thin like you were at 20. You know, I was 16 when we got together. I was a pretty little thing, you know, 130 pounds tops. You know, but they convince you of all these things that you're not.
Yes, they do. They do brainwash you.
Yes.
And then by the time you decide to leave, you do a plan broaden that somebody has to come in and help to build you back.
Yes. I'm going to open up the lines. Now, if you're in a loud room with a TV or something, if you can go, if you're going to say something, if you're going to a quiet area. So I'm going to, once I unmute everyone's mics, everyone is live. Is there anyone that wants to say anything or has any comments?
There's one that's not live.
There's one that's not live? Okay,
mm-hmm.
I missed one. Okay, now everybody's live. Is there anyone that has something to say or comment for Ms. Teresa? Okay. Well, just so everyone knows, your lines are still live, so feel free to interject if you choose to. If you have a question or a comment, everyone is still mic'd, as we say. But Teresa, you've shared a lot. You've actually, as you were telling your story, I can visualize parts of my testimony. And I learned too, even by me being transparent, that my father also abused my mother. I learned maybe 2 months ago that my father pushed my mother down some stairs while she was pregnant with my brother. I didn't know that until a couple of months ago. That was like, oh, like, why, you know, why would he try to harm you and his unborn child? And then to hear you say what your ex-husband was trying to cause a wreck because he decided he didn't want to be a father. It's just for someone that does, an abuser in their mind process. I actually had an opportunity to sit in a room not once but twice with some felons, and they were felons due to what they did to their significant other. And I asked the second group of men that I was sitting in front of to give them my testimony. I actually asked them, you know, what did they do to become a felon? And one guy was like, you know, I choked her out. It's like some of them that, you know, I slapped her or kicked the door in and, you know, beat her up. And it's like they had no remorse. It was a couple of guys that after I got through talking, their demeanor did change and they did come up to me and thank me. But to understand why another human being feels that they have the right to do harm to another human being, there's no justification for it. There's no reason for it.
Yeah.
And for someone to think that they can do something of the sort, it's mind blowing. And then for them to, we had a young man on our show last year that was an abuser, and we would simply, it just sticks in my head, stands out, because I asked him, well, how did you feel once you look, you know, realized what you had done after the fight was over? And he just simply said, I was exhausted. That was his initial thought.
Yeah.
Not remorse.
And
not,
you know,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, a lot of times they grow up in that, so it's their norm too. I mean, my ex, his father was, he was physical too, but he was, you know, he was always cussing, yelling, screaming, talking down, putting down, you know, calling his wife ignorant, my mother-in-law, my ex-mother-in-law, You know, and so my ex grew up where women were not, we were just property, you know, we were not, we were there to cook and clean, and his father wasn't faithful either, so, you know, he learned that it wasn't, you know, you have your family and they're here, and then you have your life, you can do whatever because you're the man. And so, you know, he grew up in that mentality, and that's why it's important that we get our children out of that, because I raise girls, but, you know, girls can be abusers too. But
yes,
if you raise a son in that mentality, the likelihood that he will repeat it is high, you know, and so then you have a whole other generation. So that's why it's so important that we speak to young girls and we speak to women with young children or even older children. We get them counseling. We get them help to work through this, because that anger has to go somewhere. They don't come, you know, they have it built up and they don't know what to do with it, especially when they're young. And, you know, they're going to act out. They're going to strike out. And sometimes it's going to be at someone they love. And so a lot of abusers, they just don't have remorse. My ex to this day, you know, to my youngest will say something and he'll say something about something that happened, and she'll say, well, that was the day you did this. You know, that's the day you hit mom, or that's the day you slapped mom, or that's the day you choked mom. And he'll just be like, he'll just laugh. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. I mean, there's no accountability. There's no, you know, he's not at all sorry. And that's what I tell people. You know, I forgive him. I forgive him because that's what my God tells me to do, and because I want forgiveness. But the hardest forgiveness you will ever get will be from the person who's not sorry, and you're not going to get an apology from. But forgiveness is not for that person. It's for you. I do what I do, and I had to take my power back from him. So I had to forgive him, because as long as I was in that resentment, angry, horrible state, because I was really mad, and I'm going to tell you that my mom was not as upset as my stepdad was. My stepdad was about to get a lynching party going. I mean, he was ready to go take names. But, I mean, and my mom was just like, the past is the past, because I went home once. My stepdad that my mom's married to now, they've been married 20-something years, he was in the hospital. And I went home to my mom, and I stayed 2 weeks. And I had planned to stay gone. And my girls were in kindergarten and Head Start. And I had packed my things, and I was, mother's words to me were, you made your bed, you have to lie in it, it's time to go home.
Wow.
And women face that all the time. When they go to leave their abusers, my ex was always, I had a restraining order, but he'd figure out just where 100 feet was, and then he would stand there and menace or blow the horn on his truck at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning because my mom lived in town, you know, and so he was just irritating. You know, he wasn't going to stop. And so a lot of times when a woman leaves her abuser, that's what she runs into. Her family is not supported, or she's left 4 or 5 times and they're just tired of dealing with it. She don't go back anyway. You know, and so she doesn't always have that support. I didn't have that support. My grandmother was passed away. My grandpa was living in, because I lived most of my childhood with my grandparents. My grandmother was passed away, and my grandpa was living in the assisted, you know, the elderly apartment in a one-bedroom apartment. And he was like, the girl's here, but, you know, legally you cannot live there. You can't go there, because then when you get into court, you're going to have to explain where you and your children are sleeping. You're sleeping on the hide-a-bed at your grandpa's house, and he's in an elderly place you're not supposed to be in, you know. And so you face all of those hurdles. And so that's why, you know, I want to be there and be the support. That's why I'm telling my story. My book will be out in Breaking the Code of Silence, One Woman's Story of Survival. And, you know, that's why I'm telling my story, because women don't always have the support they need, and that's the gap I want to fill. And I know that's the gap y'all want to fill too, be there to help them over that hurdle, because it is like coming back from the war. Like having PTSD or whatever. It's like coming back from the war when you re-enter society, because you've been, you know, however long you've been in that deal, you know, you probably haven't handled the money, you probably haven't handled paying the bills, because they're not giving you that power. and you probably haven't, you know, done a lot of the social part because you're afraid to talk. I couldn't talk to somebody in the grocery store because he was sure I was sleeping with that guy or I knew him from somewhere. And we lived in a small town, so I probably knew everybody. I either went to school with him or my sisters did. But I couldn't speak to anybody. I had to just look at my cart because if I was to look up or make eye contact with somebody of the opposite sex all the way home, he was going to be determined that I was, and sometimes somebody of the same sex, he would be determined that I was having an affair, you know, I was doing this because that person smiled at me and said hello. You know, it might be the guy bagging our groceries. You know, they always say hello. But
yeah, and a lot
you
of
can do
security.
Anything. And so, you know, when you're in that situation for so long, when you come back into the world, you know, into living your life, you don't always know what the next step is or how to do it. And so that's one of the reasons I speak out, because I want to support women and I want to be that gap that from the shelter or, you know, to their own homes, because there is a social gap there that you have to learn to rethink and retrain your brain and your social skills on how to act in those situations, because like I said, it's like coming back from war. You're shell-shocked. You don't know how to be in those situations. I know that when I first came back, and even when I was first with my new husband, I apologized nonstop. I'm sorry if your dinner's not warm enough. I'm sorry if the eggs aren't done right. I'm sorry if the house isn't clean right. I'm going to get the laundry done today, you know, nonstop. And my new husband, Ricky, was like, please stop apologizing. It's not your fault. Just, I mean, I would apologize if it rained too much and there was water puddles on the porch I hadn't swept off. Because that's what I did.
Right.
You know, and he was like, there's nothing you need to find. He's like, I don't care if you don't do the laundry all week. And I can cook for myself if I don't like what you're making. I can make us dinner. But, you know, I was so much that pleaser, that trying to be perfect, that I apologized before anything ever happened. I didn't want anybody upset. And so we have to learn, you know, and that's why I speak to women and that's why I step out, because there is life after abuse. I have the life I love now. God gave me everything back tenfold. I never thought I'd get paid to speak and write books. It was my dream forever to write books. My ex told me, nobody wants to read what you have to write. I mean, it was my dream. I loved reading. I always wanted to be a writer. And then God said, well, do it. Let's step out. Let's go. And I argued with him for a little bit because I wasn't sure this was a subject I wanted to write on, maybe some fiction or something. But that wasn't the plan he had for me. And
right.
So once I gave in, God opened doors tenfold. I mean, he gave me back more than I could ever. My house and everything I have is paid for. God did that. He took my divorce settlement. My new husband sold his house. We bought the place we love at the lake, and it's paid for. I don't have to worry about where it's coming from or if I'm going to be able to pay it off before I retire at 60. God did that. He gave me everything my heart wanted and everything I had prayed for. God did that.
That is awesome, Teresa. Yeah, I'm so glad that you did have the time. You took out the time out of your busy schedule. I look forward. That hour went by really fast. But I do look forward to meeting you. Because
I think I'm going to see you on the 12th. Aren't you going to the voice?
Yeah.
I think it's one voice. I will see you then.
Great. God, that's awesome.
Because I'm coming.
Well, great. Then I'll get to meet you then. That'll be awesome.
That'll be great.
We have less than a minute. We want to, again, thank you, Teresa, for being on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you. We will support whatever we can in your endeavors and what you're doing, because we are trying to do the same thing, and that's to educate and motivate women and children as well as men who are survivors as well. Feel free to contact We Are Survivors with questions, comments, and survivor stories. Like, as I said last week, we are now going to be writing for a magazine, Empowerment of African Women, their magazine, which is out of Finland and Nigeria. So please submit your survivor stories. Our email address is wearesurvivorsfoundation@gmail.com. Website is www.wearesurvivorsfoundation.org. I want to thank God for you listening and pray that today this show something was said on the show that touches your heart and motivates you to make a change in your life, we are here to help, support, guide, and listen, and to lift you up in the name of Jesus. We will always worship his holy name. God bless everyone that listens. Have a good evening.